Okay, so welcome everybody. Today is July 11th, 2016. This is the October 2015 Life Coach Training, Coach the Coach Practicum 4, Class 4, Room B. Last one together, you guys, and not much more to go, huh? How are you feeling about that?
Feeling great.
Good. Good. Almost there, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exciting, yeah.
Yeah, it is exciting. So let's see. We've got Karen in here now. Hi, Karen.
Hi there.
Okay. So any questions before we jump in? Cindy, how are you doing?
How am I doing?
I'm fine.
I'm sorry, what?
I didn't really say anything.
Oh, okay. I heard somebody say something. I'm fine. I was able to work with a couple of people, and that was helpful. And I'm just in one of those spots where I'm just feeling a little lost, and so I'm trying to get myself reconnected to the things I know that bring me back to where I need to be.
Good,
so,
good.
Yeah, so that's, well, that's pretty much where I am.
That's you know, the reason I am asking you in specific has to do with the forum post that, you know, seemed a little bit, it's been a couple of days since I read it, but a little bit like, almost apologetic about that spinning issue.
Right.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, you're right. That was actually, over like 2 weeks ago? Because that was, because we didn't have a class.
Right. The last week was 4th of July, so we skipped.
Right, right. I guess it was really good for me to hear that term and to see that that is something I often do. I'm very good at deflecting, and I'm very good at drilling down deep, but not getting anywhere with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just keep moving from. I can't think of the word, from discovery to discovery to discovery to discovery, and I don't land, you know, and it was very helpful to hear you say that. But my apology was probably because I on some level felt like I, perhaps if I had been, I don't know, in a different place, or it would have been a better experience for the people who are coaching me.
Now, here's what I want to make sure you understand, and I tried to get this point across on the forum. It's not your job as a client to do anything except answer the question as you hear the question. The whole concept of spinning is a concept that the coach wants to be aware of. So to the extent you're a student here, yes, pay attention to that. But here's the point. Question 3 of the work, how do you react and what happens when you believe the thought,
mm-hmm.
will typically and ideally inspire or move a client towards revealing other thoughts that are going on when they are working with, when they are believing the one in question. The one being worked with will always bring up other underlying stressful thoughts. So to the extent that you've shared those, that's not spinning. That's you answering the question honestly. The point about spinning is that the coach does not drop the initial thought and grab an underlying thought that comes out in question 3 and spin on to that one. And then what
right.
can happen is that that question 3 on the new thought will give rise to more thoughts underlying. And then the coach grabs that one. And you see how it can spin endlessly like that?
Yes.
Question three is designed to bring that out. And what it's supposed to do, you know, one of the most valuable things I ever heard Katie say that helps me in my coaching practice is that question three and question four are about contrast. What's it like? What is life like for you when you're believing this version of reality? It's painful. Other thoughts come up. I don't like my kids anymore. I want to run and hide. I want to eat gallons of ice cream. Whatever it is, you see, that puts us in touch with what our life is like when we're believing the thought. Question four, the contrast. Who would you be in this present life without the thought? Well, I guess I could look at it differently. I might calm down. My mind would stop running so hard. I would, you know, I would feel differently. I would behave differently. I might think differently. So that contrast is what we're after. Does that make sense, Cindy?
Yes, it makes perfect sense. It's very clear.
Okay. So you see, you were doing what clients do, which is reveal, oh, my mind is going on to other stressful places. My mind is going on to other issues. That's okay. Now, the issue that you're sharing with us about you get these insights and they don't seem to land, I mean, I don't know one person involved in personal development work that doesn't go through that, if that's helpful to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just part of what we do. And, you know, I liken it to that kids. I used to play this game with my brother, and we would have like 10 decks of playing cards, and we would build this big structure, this multi-storied house of cards. And then the game was I would remove a card and he would remove a card, and I would remove a card and he would remove a card. And at some point, the entire structure came down, all of a sudden, because the foundation was so undermined that it couldn't hold, and the weight of the upper stories would just cause the whole thing to flop and flatten on the floor. And I think when we're doing personal development work, it often works like that. We wiggle and we wiggle and we remove a card and we get an insight and nothing seems to happen. And then, boom, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my gosh, I get it. So I don't know if that's helpful to you or not.
No, it is. It is.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. So the larger point is to keep going, just to keep on the path that you're on. And, you know, the same issues, I've been doing the work, this is my eighth year now in really serious inquiry around the process, the work of Byron Katie. And I'll still get caught up in some of the same things that I used to get caught up with at the beginning, but it's just not quite so painful anymore. It doesn't flatten me like it used to, and it doesn't last for weeks and months like it used to. Now it's hours to days, if that makes sense. You know, my I'm a terrible mother story used to, you know, I could ride that one for months and switch back and forth from one kid to the other. And now, you know, my kids are having a hard time. I can go to, they're having a hard time. And I have adult children. They're having a hard time because I was a terrible mother. Yeah, okay, you were a terrible mother. You weren't perfect. And let's move on. I can kind of see through it much more quickly now. And I don't like scroll back and forth between my two kids, inspecting their lives, so that I can be okay. I need them to be okay so I can be okay, because that proves I wasn't a terrible mother. So it's not that we don't ever go back there, but it doesn't have as much, I'm getting an image of kind of like a cactus or a sticker or something. You know, it doesn't stab and jab at me like it used to.
Good.
So that's my personal experience with this kind of work. And that informs me, you see, because when I have a client that we seem to be going over the same territory quite a bit, or it seems like it's okay and then it comes back, I can be very patient with that because I went through it myself, and I don't have unreasonable expectations, or I don't mean it, make it mean that I'm a terrible coach. It's like, oh, yeah, that one again. So maybe let me just finish this sentence, and then I'll answer your question. It could be, Cindy, that you're going through this experience so that you can guide others. You know what it feels like for it to not really land and stick. So maybe this is how you're working on your coaching practice.
I'll take that one.
Yeah, no kidding, we all need to take that one home. Okay, who's got a question?
This is Jennifer.
Yes.
I just had a question about something you just said about when you said, okay, I'm a terrible mother, and you're kind of working through or moving on from that. Does that mean that we're trying to get our clients to disbelieve the thought that they're a terrible mother, or is it that they're just accepting that that's just how they feel and then moving on? I was just curious. It seemed like a little bit of a distinction because I thought we were disbelieving, like we were finding evidence to disbelieve thoughts.
Well, I'm really trying to disconnect from a reality that means that if they're having a problem, the conclusion is I was a terrible mother. Am I answering your question? I mean, I'm not trying to actively disbelieve it. I'm not really trying to do anything except to find the truth. So, you know, the truth is when they were very young, I was stressed out a lot. I was a single mother. I was scared. Could I have been more effective? Absolutely. Could I have really been more effective? No, I had no skills, I had no tools, I had no support. I was as effective as I could be. But in an ideal world, could I have been the calm, relaxed, always loving mother? Sure. But do I want to take myself to a place of despair now over the past that I have no control over? I absolutely don't. It makes me feel worse, and it makes me less effective in my ability to support them now. So I don't know if I'm sidestepping your question or I'm answering correctly.
You're answering it.
But I
think it's a lot of sense.
That, pardon me?
So that makes a lot of sense. I was just trying to understand how you were, because I think I was just thinking it was all, like the work was about, I think in one of Martha's books she wrote, the way to get through suffering is either to grieve or disbelieve. So I thought kind of it was like one or the other, but it seems like there's a lot of shades of gray.
Well, yeah, and you know, let's define disbelief. You know, disbelief to me means, you know, it still comes back. It still bothers me sometimes. I still contemplate it. And this is, of course, is my one of my big issues, you know, mothering. And it was an issue as a child in my relationship with my own mother. So not surprisingly, my performance in my own mothering is, you know, a place that really I'm very tender around it. And I can get very defensive about it. So, yes, I can disbelieve that I was a terrible mother, except when I can't. And when I can't, I have more work to do. But it's not like it's not like a ground that we can hold in our mind that never gets challenged again.
That makes sense. No, that I understood, that it's like, you know, especially if it's one of our personal religions, we have to keep kind of at it.
Right.
But thank you so much. I really appreciate that clarification.
Good, good, good. Okay. Anyone else?
Terry, this is Donna.
Yeah.
So what is the difference? I guess I'm a little confused between thought dissolving and the work, and when you use that compared to when somebody just has a lizard fear. For example, my lizard fear with becoming a coach is bottom line just being seen, because it wasn't safe for me as a child to be seen. And I've done years of therapy over that, but here I'm trying to become a coach and help people, and that lizard, the lizard brain is going, yeah, but it's really not safe for you to be seen, and it's really not safe for your story to be told. So I'm thinking, okay, how, is that a lizard thing, or is that a thought-dissolving thing? So I'm not even sure how to coach myself, in, because I'm not even sure what square I'm in, you know.
Well, that's square one. That's square one. That's easy. You are, I mean, is it stopping you? Is it stopping you from moving forward?
Yes. I can dream and scheme, but I don't want to implement. Exactly. It's stopping me.
Yeah, and I'm going to bet that your dreaming and scheming takes into account the lack of safety. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Oh, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So let me dream and scheme in this little, you know, a little more modest version than I might otherwise dream and scheme about if I didn't believe that it wasn't safe to be seen. So to me, that's a square one issue. Your thoughts are getting in your way. Now, your question is, what's the difference between... Or what exactly is your question?
I so with that thought, what is the best tool? Because I'm trying to, I recognize that you taught us tools in an order of, you know, we started with square one, and then we ended with square three.
Right.
These are the tools that you use. And not that they don't mix and match, but, you know, there are some tools that work best in square one and some tools that work better in square three. And they're fluid. I understand that. But I'm just trying to figure out what, for my own self-coaching, it's like what do you use on a lizard thought, which is very strong, even though, like I said, I've done work on it. It's my story. It's my story. It's not safe to be seen.
Right. Okay. So here's how I would work. Sorry, I'm going to turn off my phone so that those dings aren't distracting. Here's how I would work with it if you were my client. And it could be, Jennifer, that you need to hire an outside coach to help you through this. You see, it might be. I mean, I've got stuff that I work with a coach all the time on when I'm stuck and just can't get to it. I certainly try self-coaching myself first, but, you know, sometimes this stuff is beyond what we can do, which is why this whole profession exists. If we could all just take a class, quote, fix ourselves, and I hate using the term fix ourselves because it implies something's broken and nothing is broken. So let's start from there. Nothing is broken, but you have this sense of unease about being seen. So I would approach it. I can't give you a hard and fast answer, but I would try the work, but I would do it situationally. Like, let's talk about one way you might enjoy putting yourself out there if you weren't afraid. And you might say, well, I'd go to networking events, or you might say, well, I'd write a blog post and publish it. Okay, so let's think about that blog post, or let's think about you speaking up in a workshop, or whatever it is that you thought was unsafe that was present in your life. I would work there. I wouldn't work with the big thought, it's not safe to be seen. So I would, you know, I'm gonna take little bites at this as a coach and not try to solve the whole problem in a session or two. So we're going to, again, the house of cards, I'm going to just pull a little card out at a time, a little card at a time. And I know at some point that whole house of cards is going to come down, or you're going to be so sick of the story, you're just willing to take a chance.
I love it. I like I like two things that you said, Terry. One is that nothing is broken.
Right.
Good. But there is dis-ease and comfortability is lacking. But breaking it down into places where I am comfortable, because it's not completely true, you know.
Right.
It just, there are places right. where it feels true, and there are places where it's so not true. So
right.
it's so good to remember those things.
Where are those places where you're a little stuck and a little afraid? And how could you, you know, you turtle step it with thought work. You like, what's the next little place? Okay, I can go to a networker, but I'm afraid to walk up to somebody I've never met before. Well, imagine yourself mm-hmm. in that situation. What thoughts come up? Oh, my God, they won't like me. They'll think I'm a dork. They'll think I'm a fraud. Whatever it is, you know, I'm giving you some of mine mm-hmm. that I used to have. So we work through that situationally. Okay, now go to the networker and see what happens. Experiment, you know. So I might work with you a little bit, you know, with the thought work, and then try to take a little action. I will know soon enough if you just stop going to networkers, we got a lot more square one work to do. We'll actually start moving forward a little bit in this, you see. Or I can see things mm-hmm. emerging. Okay, now we can start working more in that area. But usually, at least in my practice, there's a lot of the square one work is so foundational. It's, you know, it's 85-90% of what I do. And I come back to it over and over and over again because, you know, we're all afraid. We're just all really afraid. And the question is it going to stop us? And can we get comfortable with that fear, put ourselves out there, and move forward? So, you know, I might use metaphors with you. You might start having dreams. I mean, it's hard to tell you what tool, but it depends on where are you being stopped, how are you feeling, and are you able to move forward? And can you tolerate feeling the feeling of anxiety when you walk through that door of the networker, realize, okay, I'm afraid of being seen. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to introduce myself to three new people today and see if I
leave. Mm-hmm.
See, you know, presence and mindfulness is another big tool with afraid of being seen.
Mm-hmm.
Am I painting everybody on the planet with the same broad brush? Or am I safe in this situation? And the only way I can find that out is to get really present, to drop the story and look around. Am I safe here? Is somebody out to hurt me or humiliate me? So it's a process, and there's just a lot of different approaches. And, you know, as a coach, I'll just try whatever I can. I've got experience and training to back me up, so it's, you know, there's some reason and methodology to it, but then there's some experimentation, and that's the art form. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, before we let the whole class go away and you guys just have me talking, I think we should do some coaching. What do you guys think?
Sure.
Sounds good. Perfect.
Okay. Now, Melissa, of the three, Melissa, Jennifer, and Donna have volunteered to coach today. I'm going to ask Melissa to start because of the three of you, she's the one that did it last. Now, let me see who else has come on. Jody, you've joined us. Jody, I don't see that you've coached in a really long time. What's up with that?
I'm just letting other people have turns. I actually do lots of coaching practice-wise, so I like to listen. And unfortunately, today I have to leave the call early, so I won't.
Okay.
But thank you for asking.
Just checking. anyone else who hasn't coached in quite a while? No? Okay. All right. Well, Melissa, how about you coaching? And let's see, who would like to be coached? I don't know, Melissa. What are we going to do with these people, huh?
You know what, Perry? Why doesn't Melissa help me with my lizard thing of I don't want to be seen?
I love that idea. Who was that, Donna?
This is Donna.
Mm-hmm. Donna, right. Okay, excellent. I love that idea. Okay. So,
Donna. Go ahead. Okay.
Even better.
It's been a while since we chatted, so it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah. So tell me a little about your lizard thoughts.
Okay. So in person, I am very comfortable meeting new people, when I meet people face to face, I really like to listen and I enjoy them and I want to go deep with them. And I know that if you're going to have an interesting, intimate conversation, you have to be vulnerable and go deep too. So the one-on-one or coffees, parties, whatever, I'm great. Where I'm terrified and frozen at being seen, and I don't know why, is the internet. It's like I love to write, and I was an English major in college, and I'm very creative. I'm an amazing writer, and I am terrified to let it be seen on a blog. And I just feel really stuck because I don't know what the heck is up with that.
Okay. So when you think just of a blog, what do you think about writing about?
Trying to think about the last thing that I was writing about. Having a brain freeze. Often I am very real in my writing about, for example, I haven't written anything, but right now my stepmom is dying and I'm in the midst of grief and might write about, you know, the struggle that grief is so inconvenient. Because you can't count on it to stay within the boundaries of polite conversation. And so I might write about, you know, all the faux-pas where I'm like, oh, you know, I'm in the midst of the grocery store and all of a sudden I think, oh, my stepmom loves pears and I'm standing over the pears with tears running down my face and going, I guess this is going to have to be okay because this is grief. And, you know, I'm just going to have to walk through the grocery store with tears running down my face because my stepmother loves pears and I'm you know, buying her pairs.
Okay.
So I might write about that, and I could talk to another human being about it and be so okay. But if I wrote about it and put it in a blog, I just feel so unprotected and raw.
Okay, so when you were talking to Terry, you did talk about that not feeling safe, putting yourself out there. Can we move on?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
When you talked with Terry earlier, you talked about that feeling of not being safe putting things out there. Tell me where I'm wrong.
It doesn't feel safe. Yeah.
Okay. And so it feels safe to you. I just want to clarify. It feels safe to you talking about it with someone, but it's actually the writing down that doesn't feel safe, or having other people read it that doesn't feel safe, or where is it within that structure that it's starting to break down for you?
I grew up in a very abusive, unsafe family and have had to learn that the world is safe, but certain people are not safe. And so I can walk in a room and get a vibe of this person isn't somebody that you want to, you know, have an intimate conversation with. So keep it, you know, pass the salt type of conversation. And then other people you just meet and you're like, oh, this is a kindred spirit. We can really enjoy talking about life and whatever. But on the internet, to me, it's like all of the wisdom of these people are safe and these people aren't safe, I feel boundaryless, I guess, because it's just out there. And that's true. It's just out there, and people are going to think what they're going to think. And I don't care what they think, I guess. What I'm concerned about is I just don't want to get really bad comments of responses. It's like if somebody wants to think I'm stupid or I'm crazy or, you know, I have nothing of value to give, fine. That is just fine. You can think that, but don't write me a nasty email telling me, you know, I just don't want that energy. Coming at me anymore. It's like, I'm kind of done with that. So,
does that make sense?
Do you feel yeah, it does, sure. Do you feel the energy comes at you more if it's unspoken or if it's written? I mean, is there a difference in that energy for you?
There is something about it being written, and I think this has been brought up. So I don't do Facebook much, but I do Instagram, and I follow someone who is very well known on Instagram. She's got probably 5,000 followers, and she made a comment about something, And this person wrote her a very nasty, you know, email calling her all kinds of things. And she actually posted it and said, you know, it's really sad that you're calling me all these things when you have a daughter and you're, you know, lumping women into this group because you're calling me this, which means you're calling your daughter this. And for some reason, that shook me up of, oh, I will be fine if that person thinks I'm whatever, but I don't want to read emails that would come to me and just, you know, say mean things. I don't know why that matters. I it's kind of like why in the world would it even matter? You know, but for some reason, it would matter that somebody would write me a nasty email, and I would open it up and be drinking my coffee and be going, oh, this is how I get to start my day with being called blah, blah, blah. And I don't, that's a fear that has never even happened. It's a futuristic, I'm not in the moment, I'm not in the present. I just want to protect myself from that. And I feel like that's not even reasonable. You know, I mean, what Mark Twain said something about, you know, we worry about all these things but that never really happened to us. And it's like, I don't want to live there. That annoys me, that I would even waste my time being afraid of something that has never even happened. So I'm frustrated with myself.
Can you maybe narrow down a thought on that? And you want to try doing the work on it?
Hey, Melissa, for some reason, I'm not hearing you clearly. Can you move your headset or whatever you've got a little bit?
Can you hear better?
More clear?
Can you hear that better?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
Okay, not a problem. So, Donna, would you like to maybe frame a thought around that, about that fear of being attacked in writing?
In writing.
Melissa, may I make a suggestion?
Please.
Would you like me to make a suggestion?
I would always love to hear.
I wish I had asked you that at the beginning. I'm sorry. You frame a thought. Haven't you heard enough here to frame up a thought?
Yeah, I guess I just always thought the person was supposed to frame a thought.
Absolutely not. You're the coach. What are you going to do with somebody who doesn't know the word?
Well, that's helpful. Thank you.
That's true.
Good point.
You know, okay. make it situational. You see, she's given you the situation that frightens her. Now, put her in that situation in her imagination, because it hasn't happened. She hasn't done that.
Okay.
You know, as you frame up the thought that's bothering her, between you and me, what are the thought or thoughts that are in her way?
The thoughts that are in her way, that somebody will attack the words and it will somehow hurt her.
Okay, so let's bring it up, though. You see, in a workable sentence, somebody will attack her. Good. That's one. That's a good one.
So someone will attack.
Someone will attack me. If I blog on the internet, someone will attack me. That's a very painful thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you know how to make the transition into thought work where you take the lead, Melissa?
Well, I'm not sure. You want me to give a stab and tell me if I'm doing it right?
Yes, absolutely. And if you're doing it
right, that would be awesome.
I'm not going to say a word. So you just,
okay, that would be awesome. Please chime in if you have anything to say. I will.
Yeah. Oh, I always have something to say. Then we're not going to.
All right.
Okay.
So, Donna,
go for it.
Donna, you talked about, you know, blogging something that might be painful for you, a painful experience, and then having someone attack that. Can you imagine that happening to you? You've blogged about your the dying parent, and someone doesn't agree with your words, and they attack what you've written. And I'd like you to think about that and really start to feel that in your body.
Okay, I want to make a little distinction here, Melissa. The situation is that she's going to blog with the fear. Remember, this has not happened. So you're about to publish a blog and you're afraid to do it because you're believing someone will attack me. That's
so we want to say in the before, not the actual act of.
Right. We're not going to take her all the way to you're being attacked.
Gotcha.
You know, because
it's
now it's because once she's being attacked, we've got a real circumstance. It's hard to, who would you be without the thought that someone will attack you? Well, they
right
have the way you've set it up. Right. So
okay.
Yeah, you got it.
Got it. Okay. So you've written this beautiful blog about your mother. Or is that your mother-in-law? Are you there, Donna?
Yeah, I've written a beautiful blog about my mom, and I'm afraid.
And
Melissa, are you on a speakerphone?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, then keep going.
Am I still cutting out a lot or being hard to hear?
It's not that you're cutting out. It sounds very echoey, like you were talking to a speaker, but we'll just deal with it.
Oh, okay. Well, why not? But I will just try to talk as loudly as I can. So you're ready to post this blog about this beautiful blog that you've written about your mother. And I want to know what you're feeling right now.
I'm excited. And I'm anxious, and I'm proud.
And when you say anxious, is that anxiety anxious or the kind that comes with excitement?
The anxiousness is not the kind that comes with excitement. I am hopeful and excited, but it's not purely joyful excitement. It's anxious, kind of right before you take a test feeling.
Okay. So the anxiety, the real anxiety of anxious, okay. So if we want to do the work on that, the thought would be someone will attack me if I blog. If I post the blog, someone will attack me.
That's the fact. Someone will attack me if I post this blog.
And you're getting ready to post it.
Okay.
So is it true that someone will attack you if you write a blog, if you post a blog?
No. It is not true that someone will attack me.
And even when you go to that center of what you believe to be true, and you think about it with that, does that change that thought at all? Is it true?
It is not absolutely true, but there is room for possibility.
Okay. All right. And so you have this really anxious, heavy kind of tense thought about posting this blog or being attacked. Who would you be without that thought?
Have you taken her?
Oh, how do you react? I'm sorry. I missed one. Okay. So in believing that thought, how do you react when you believe that? How do you behave? And what's your life like when you believe this real version of your reality, that you will be attacked if you post it?
Well, it affects my being TAO in the writing. So I'm not as authentic as I would like to be. I am withholding. I'm also not as playful as I like to be with writing. It would actually change the blog because I won't be as authentic. I will be
restrained. And I think if I believe that, I won't write the things that I want to say to people when I'm listening to them with my whole heart. When I listen to people face to face, then I respond in a very tender way to them. So my stepmom is dying, and my neighbor's sister just died. And so we were sitting on the porch talking about grief and the fact that her sister just died and my stepmom is dying. And it was so sweet and tender, and I think I would want to distance in a vlog if I felt like somebody was going to attack.
Melissa, it sounds like she's on her porch. Is she answering your question?
No, I'm not at all. We were going to get to that as soon as she got in.
Yeah, bring her on.
All right, thanks. So what I heard you say is that you wouldn't feel as authentic, and you would kind of edit or withhold information from the blog. And when you think of all these things, is that a shackles on or a shackles off feeling?
This is definitely shackles on.
Okay. And who would you be without those thoughts, the thought that that someone would attack your blog?
Without the thought, would be able to receive inspiration. I wouldn't be blocked. And I love to write. It's just fun. It's pure fun. Without the thought that I would be attacked. So I'm just inspired and feel that when I don't feel like I'm going to be attacked, writing is just sort of like sitting next to a warm fireplace, and I'm cozy and I'm safe and I'm calm, and it's just and I'm grounded. I feel really grounded when I write, when I have no fears of being attacked. It's a very rooted place for me.
Oh, and I'm guessing that's unshackled.
Definitely unshackled.
Okay. So I'd like to take the thought that someone will attack me if I blog, if I publish my blog. And can you think of what the opposite of that would be?
Someone will embrace me. Someone will be helped.
Well, try to use those same words. Someone will attack me if I blog. And the opposite of that would be?
Someone will love me.
Maybe no
one.
Someone
will protect me. Someone will protect me.
Someone will protect you. How about no one will attack you?
No one will attack me. That's good.
So no one will attack me if I blog. Can you?
No one will attack me if I blog.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of two or three circumstances where that would be true?
Yes. I had a blog I've had two blogs. One was a real estate blog, but one was a personal blog. And I just did it for the joy of writing, just to share my life.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of affirmation from my previous blog. I was seen by people I don't know, and it was safe. So yeah, there was affirmation. It was seen by people I don't know. So I left my circle of safety, and it was okay. It was actually more than okay.
All righty then. And that happened in two different blogs. Am I understanding that right?
You are. I have actually forgotten that experience. It's been a couple of years. But, yeah.
Well, can you give me one more? Can you maybe give me one more circumstance where it would be true, where no one will attack me if I blog?
Hmm.
Good one.
No one will attack me if I blog. Evidence of that. I would say probably the big thing is that my blog was seen by my family, who I don't consider safe, and they liked it. So that's probably, so unsafe people saw it and did not attack me.
Oh, okay. So you felt great joy in writing a blog already, actually two blogs where no one attacked you and you got an affirmation. It was seen by people you know, including the family who were unsafe, and you got positive feedback. And that's on the video.
Yeah.
No one will attack you if you blog. Okay. So are you ready to turn it around again? Would you like to just stay in that just a minute to remember how fun it was to blog and write? I think you said pure fun.
Yeah. This may be. So my question to myself is, why in the world would my lizard be yapping about this when my actual experience and evidence doesn't need my lizard to yap about this? Like, hey, I've actually got really good experiences doing this. Why in the heck is my lizard brain going, oh, you're going to be attacked because my not too recent, but past history is, no, that's not even true. There's evidence that that's not true.
And lizard brains are pretty strong wiring in there, you know, pretty hardwired. So be gentle and kind to yourself in it coming back.
That's true.
So you want to turn the thought around to the other?
Sure.
All right. So someone will attack me if I publish my blog. What is the other?
This is where I really get stuck. I can do the opposite, but I don't understand the other. Could you give me some ideas as to how I would rephrase this? I will not attack me if I write a blog. That's not true. The blog will not attack me. That's not true. So I will not attack me. The blog will not attack me.
Well, we're working on that someone will attack me if I blog. So I will attack me if I blog is just stuff, right? I don't know, Terry. I'm lost.
Well, when you have two people and you're turning to other, you flip the people. This one is pretty straightforward. Someone will attack me if I post this blog. Now flip the entities.
I will attack someone if I post
it. Uh-huh. How might that be true? How are you going to attack somebody if you post this blog? And it can be in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, something that I've been very careful not to do is put publicly out there about my childhood and the fact that I was, you know, very abused. And so that does limit my authenticity a bit when I'm thinking about blogging. It's like I can be very real, very vulnerable, very honest, but when it comes to telling the truth about my childhood to, like, the world, I feel completely not free to do so.
Donna?
Because
Donna,
yeah.
So with the statement, I will attack someone if I post this blog, can you give me three examples of that?
I would attack someone if I told the truth about my childhood. And that's the only one I can really come up with. That's a biggie for me.
Okay, now, Melissa, are you going to let her get away with that?
No, I'm really not. it's almost to me like that's a whole new one to work on.
But listen, do you get how this operates in this situation, Melissa? What is she doing in her mind? You know, her fear. What's she afraid of?
Telling the truth.
Well, yes, that. We're going to put that one aside. Okay, that's a good one. Okay. If I tell the truth about my abusive family, I will attack somebody. But in her mind, she's going to post an innocent article about the loss of her stepmother. And she's got all of these vicious people in her imagination. Isn't that an attack? She has created this cast of vicious characters. Who's doing the attacking?
Mm-hmm.
You get the point? You have to take a little poetic license when you're doing this. But to me, this one, an example, if I may, Donna, may I give you an example of how this would work in my mind?
Absolutely.
Okay. I will attack someone if I post this blog when I imagine a nasty person that I don't know taking issue with me. Aren't I attacking someone? I'm attacking my reader, imagining them to be nasty enough to write me an email. Do you get the point there?
Yes.
It may work for you, it may not, but I'm offering that to you.
Well,
okay.
It becomes
find what?
Critical.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how else do you point that? Find another example.
I would attack someone if I see the worst in humanity or believe the worst of humanity.
Yes.
And forget that people are basically kind. And I would attack someone if I send this blog, if I believe that people are wanting to stay broken. Or stay wounded, or stay stuck. If I believed that, I would be attacking them in their. I would be prejudiced. I would be judgmental. I would be narrow. Yeah, if I believed that I'm going to attack someone if I blog and I would be attacking them if I stay in my prejudice and in my judgment and in my narrowness, that they won't be open to me.
Okay.
That makes me, you know, if I can't be authentic in my blog and I can't write what I want to write, not caring that I'm being prejudiced and judgmental and narrow and assuming that I know something that's not knowable, which is pretty arrogant, actually.
So you do not have to judge your statement at all, but it's good to kind of explore those others. So,
I'm going to ask you to just move it to the last turnaround and let's get it wrapped up.
That's where I'm going.
In the interest of time, so that we can get another pair in. Excellent. Thank you.
So
I'm not trying to rush you. I just want you to be a little mindful.
Perfectly. Turn the thought around to yourself. And that thought was, someone will attack me if I blog, if I post my blog.
So something like, I would judge myself if I blog?
I will attack me.
I will attack me if I blog.
Mm-hmm. So can you give me your example for that might be true?
Well, that might, if I blog, I might become more self-aware to things, to my shadow side. So that would be attacking.
Just to be more aware of attacking?
Of the shadow side of myself. Because when you write, everything comes out, at least when I write. It's like if I free write, my thoughts, just trying to clear my head before I even try to write a post, I see.
I'm just questioning the self-awareness of being in the chat.
Actually, I like being self-aware, so no, I don't think the last one works.
Okay. I will attack me if I post the blog. Where might you attack yourself if you blog something? Where might you attack yourself?
Where might I attack myself?
In thinking about posting that blog.
You know, I pretty much don't. Once something's been out there, I don't regret.
We haven't put it out there yet. We haven't quite put it out there yet. So I will attack myself if I post the blog. How might you attack yourself?
Because I haven't put it out there yet.
Yeah.
I might be overcritical of what I've written.
Okay.
I might second guess. The value.
Okay.
I might have a thought that I don't have anything to say.
Okay, so as you look at these thoughts, all these new thoughts that you've created with the turnaround, is there anyone that kind of feels truer than that original thought or that settles better than that original thought?
I think the most revealing was this
Does no one will attack me if I blog?
No, the most mm-hmm. revealing was that I would think so badly of people that they're mm-hmm. even gonna, you know. That's really revealing to me, that I would judge the masses, as because when I meet people in smaller doses, I think of people as being basically good, basically kind, basically wonderful. I don't, you know, but when I think of the internet, I think of people being more, my view of people turns to be very prejudiced and judgmental and narrow, thinking, oh, they're not going to be good, they're not going to be kind. And that's a flaw in my thinking that isn't even logical. So that's been the most revealing thing for me.
And I wonder if you just thought of, instead of people out there on the internet, if you thought of them each as those individuals that you interact with so well, as opposed to a whole group of people, if that would feel more comfortable or safer for you.
Oh, my gosh. If I just thought that my blog was going to go to, like, three people, I would not hesitate at saying submit post, you know. And I can imagine it that way, and that just changes everything. Just to imagine that it's not going to go to more than, you know, three people. Okay, I can send it to three people with zero reservations. So
that's
you know,
nice
I just
to say.
I think I will probably do more work on why my viewpoint of humanity changed. And but that was very, Melissa, that was very insightful and very, very helpful today.
Oh,
I'm very grateful.
Thank you so much for your honesty and openness. I appreciate it. I always love talking to you.
This course is so wonderful. This is a lovely tribe.
I agree.
Well, Terry, I'm good. I feel really helped.
Yay. Good. Well, Melissa, there's no arguing with success, is there?
Well, thank you so much for your help. I want you on all my calls from now on.
Well, that's really not the point here. Can I give you a little bit of feedback?
Oh, please do. Please, please.
Okay. First of all, you did a great job. You know, you guided her through. Somebody is moving a paper or a collar or hair or something near a headset, and I can hear the rustling. If you could be really, thank you, very mindful of that. Okay. Your timing is great. She, you know, you let her go on. You stayed with that timing. You matched her really well there, and I really liked the way you did that. What I'd like to see you do in addition, Melissa, is step a little more into your leadership energy. And I'm not sure you're aware of it, but the same way you asked her, would you like to frame up a thought and do the work, you did that a number of times again as you took her through the work. Do you want to turn it around to the other rather than, okay, let's turn that thought to the other now.
Okay.
Do you see the difference?
I absolutely do. Thank you.
Yeah. So if you can just be a little more mindful of that, I think you're mm-hmm. really going to nail this. And the client is going to feel more held. They'll feel more secure in the kind of confusion or morass or whatever it is they're working through. We want to
that makes sense,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're being held by somebody that really can see their way through the fog.
Mm-hmm.
So you did that at several points. I don't need to go back and read them all to you. I took notes, but you get the
point. No, I think I did at every single turnaround. I know I did, yeah.
Well, it's okay. You know, we have to be aware of it before we can change it. So turn it around to yourself. Turn it around to the other. You can say, does that feel complete? You know, I do ask there, does that feel complete? But sometimes you can even tell if it feels complete. You know, I might do that after question 4 or question 3. But the leadership of just explaining to the client, this is where we're going. You know, certainly you don't do that around their answers. You know, the content is the client's, but the structure we want to hold firmly for them. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so
nice
much.
Nice job.
That.
And thanks for stepping up.
Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Let's see now. Jennifer, I see you were also willing. Donna, I know
yes.
you volunteered as well, and I thank you for that, but you coached just last time, so I'm going to let Cindy do this one, if that's okay.
Perfect.
Unless we have a volunteer that hasn't coached in Coach the Coach 4 at all. Cindy, I don't hear them. I think this one.
Oh.
Or was somebody going to speak up?
I thought Jennifer
Did you say Jennifer?
I did. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay.
I meant Jennifer. I don't know what I said.
That's okay. I'm flat.
No, my eye hopped on the wrong line. I'm looking at this little spreadsheet.
No problem.
So anyway, can we have a client for Jennifer, please?
Well, this is Melissa, and I'm happy to be if no one else wants to.
Going once, going twice. Melissa, you're the high bidder.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi,
okay.
Jennifer.
Let me just ask what I meant to ask Melissa at the beginning. Do you want me to jump in, Jennifer, or would you prefer I give you your feedback at the end?
It doesn't matter to me. I can take it either way. However
well,
you like.
Pick, so I know what to do.
Interrupt me.
Okay. You're always
okay.
Free to, you're always free to stop and ask me for help.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
How are you?
I am doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So what's going on? What's stressful in your life right now?
Well, I just had this epiphany that now I need to, some direction on, and I have chronic pain, different parts of my body, different things, but what I just recently realized is that in anticipation of pain, I move my body differently. Like just even in standing up, I have recognized that I anticipate pain, so I stand up differently. And I know it's not good for my body how I'm changing the movements. And it's also this always I'm expecting pain, and so I'm wondering how much that's actually triggering real pain, the expectation of it. So I'm not... Yeah, I feel like I need to do some thought work around that or body work or all kinds of work.
Okay. So can you say more about how you're standing up differently? Is there a thought that's happening or is it sort of an instinct that you just anticipate you're afraid of the pain or what's happening here? Can you say a little more about that, please?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when I had knee surgery. There was a certain exercise that I had to have my husband help me force my leg because my brain was so paralyzed knowing I was going to be in pain, I literally couldn't lift my leg. And so there are things like squatting that I think I can do, but I'm so terrified to do because I don't know if there's going to be pain or not that I get paralyzed. I literally cannot make myself squat. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't really know if I can or not. I just, the pain won't allow my body to move that way.
So is it because you're experiencing the pain or is that you're anticipating the pain when you don't squat? That's what I'm trying to understand.
I think I'm anticipating pain. I think that's where I'm
okay.
at. But I'm not really feeling it yet. It's just that thought that it might be there that gets in my head so hard that I literally cannot move my body.
Okay. So I just want you to kind of, are you sitting down or lying down right now?
No, I'm sitting down.
Okay. I just want to give you the opportunity to take a couple of deep breaths. Right now, just in through your nose and out through your mouth. Okay. And I just want you to, if your feet are flat on the floor, just imagine there's a couple of roots coming through your feet, going down through the ground. They're sort of grounding you to the earth. And while you're doing that, I just want you to focus on your breath. And then I want you to imagine the same root coming through your coccyx, your tailbone area. And it's also going to ground you to the earth. And then I just want you to draw your attention to that area so in your knees, wherever that area is that you think this pain is going to happen.
Okay.
And so can you get a picture of it, or does it look like anything? Is there a color associated with it?
It's circular, and it's like a really slow-moving, dirty tornado.
Slow-moving, dirty tornado. Okay. And so, do you think it's a complete description, or do you think you need to make any more contact with that feeling, this circular, slow-moving, dirty tornado?
You know, it's kind of like a storm because it's almost like lightning strikes with the sharpness that I expect. I mean, it's kind of like the lightning you can see, but you can't hear the thunder yet.
Yeah. Yep. I know what you mean. And so do you want to name this physical sensation? Can you name it for me?
And Jennifer, I just want you to be mindful that we're moving towards the end of class. So this one needs to be short.
I'll be quick.
We can go over a little
bit. I'll just name it for you. We'll call it the Dirty Tornado Lightning Storm. Does that sound good for you?
We could just call it, Dirty Tornado is fine.
Okay, so we're going to call it the Dirty Tornado Sensation. And so you're going to become the dirty tornado sensation. So I want you to just focus your attention on that area, get that image in your mind, and just sort of get your nose as close as you can with your imagination to that. And then I want you to turn backwards and kind of fall into this dirty tornado sensation. And when you're ready, just say, I am the dirty tornado sensation.
Okay, I am the dirty tornado sensation.
Okay. So I'm going to talk to the dirty tornado sensation now. Okay. The dirty tornado sensation, could you describe yourself with three adjectives? And say, I am, when your answer.
I'm ugly. I'm disorganized. And I'm dangerous.
So you tell me the sensation was ugly, disorganized, and dangerous. What is your purpose here for Melissa?
My purpose is to keep her safe.
And do you tell me the sensation who is ugly, disorganized, and dangerous, and whose purpose is to keep Melissa safe? How are you going to help Melissa?
I'm here to help her feel.
You here to help her feel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you say a little more about that dirty tornado sensation, about helping her feel?
I kind of feel like I'm here to help her move to the other side.
Move to the other side. Could you say a little more about moving to the other side of what?
Moving to the other side of pain.
Moving to the other side of pain?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, dirty tornado sensation, is there anything else you would like to add, or do you feel complete with that?
I feel complete.
Okay. And so, let's come back to you, Melissa. I'm going to just recap for you what we learned from the dirty tornado sensation. You said, I am ugly, I'm disorganized, I'm dangerous, and my purpose is to keep her safe, and I'm here to help her feel to get to the other side of pain. Now, is there anything about that wisdom that stands out for you, Melissa?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind is you have to have the yin and the yang. And so without the pain, I wouldn't know what it's like to not have it and to be free from it.
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah, it feels like it's about now moving beyond feeling that, like I don't need the pain anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a place to play a little while and try to figure out that.
Yeah, and I think the, if we had more time, we could maybe play around with the idea that you're anticipating having this pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because, the story in your head is saying that there's going to be pain, so you're sort of trying to do your best to avoid it when you're not even sure in that moment when you're making the shift that you're going to have the pain. Tell me what
I'm actually thinking it's even more like, in my mind, I almost need the pain.
Say more about that. Why do you need the pain?
To warn me, to stop me. I mean, I think that's how I've used it. I don't want to.
Say more about what it's stopping you from.
Stopping me from doing things I'll say a lot. But I don't know that to be true at all.
I couldn't understand what you just said, Melissa.
Stopping me from doing things that I'll fail at.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So you need the pain to, as your sort of an excuse for why you won't try to do something that you might fail at. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Oh, I want you to be, but I can't really tell you where you are.
So, can you give me a situation where the pain might stop you from doing something that you might fail at? So what is it really that you're afraid of? Do you have a situation that we can talk about?
I'm afraid it's really more about physical things. I'm afraid anymore to get up on a ladder. And I choose not to, like, do rigorous hikes that I would love to do.
So when your heart is desiring to go on a hike, but your fear is sort of taking you away from that, your fear and your heart's desire are kind of going in two different directions. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You're right.
Okay. So I think what I've learned is that when fear and your heart's desire is pointing in the different directions, you should always go with your heart. But that's just my
thing. I can agree with that.
So what could be as an example, maybe a turtle step, a little tiny step towards just testing to see if a hike, maybe it's not a rigorous hike, maybe it's a little walk. Have you done anything like that?
Well, I do walk every day a couple of miles, but I'm in Indiana and it's really flat here, so it's not a hard walk at all.
Okay. And do you experience pain after your walk?
I'd love to be in the hills. I would love to hike in hills, not mountains yet, but maybe some hills in southern Indiana.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, when you're hiking on the flat path, you don't have pain when you're finished?
Oh, I have pain during and when I'm done, but I know the pain to anticipate.
Okay.
It's more, it's not the pain that gets in the way of me doing it.
The pain's not stopping you. The experience of pain that you're having when you're walking isn't stopping you from walking, so it's manageable is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. So is there a small hill that you could try to make sure that the pain is manageable? Because I wouldn't want you to go all the way to a rigorous hike, especially since this is a physical experience that you're having.
I might be able to find a hill around here somewhere.
Okay. Do you think you could do that in the next week?
Yeah.
That's something that you think that you can manage?
I do that. That's
just
a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I know we're running out of time here, so I don't know.
It's okay. We've got time to finish up. I just wanted you to, not extend to 3 o'clock or something.
Okay. Okay. So, within the next week, you'll try a small hill and see how that goes. And the other thing I would like for you to do is just notice, when you're getting up off the chair or you need to get down and squat, notice the thought that you have and see if there's an actual thought there somewhere that's stopping you from squatting. So you talked about earlier, and just notice it, and then you can write it down, and then when we can come back to it, and we can obviously do the work on those thoughts, we're running out of time, so I don't want to necessarily go down that road this time, but we can do it again next time, and also take a couple deep breaths when that happens, and see if you're able to then squat, because I feel like sometimes if it's the fear that's stopping you from squatting, taking a couple deep breaths will sort of help dissipate that fear and see if it helps you kind of move forward. There's some things to play around with during this next week.
I will. Especially the breathing part and the thought part right before. Yeah, that's going to be helpful to try to be aware of that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I hope that
you
feel complete with this.
I really appreciate it.
Okay. Perry?
Nice. Good job.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure where to go. Like, I feel bad because of the time.
No. It's
pressure.
Okay. We'll take the time we need. But, if you weren't mindful, this could easily go to who knows what, and I've got another call I've got to make.
Okay.
Good job. I love the choice of tool. I mean, how perfect to use a metaphor dream analysis combination with the body. That was quite nice. I love your confidence, Melissa. You're a really confident coach, and that's fantastic. Would you like to have a couple of little points that might help you get even more powerful with this tool?
Yes.
At least in my opinion about it.
Sure. I love it.
You had a habit of repeating back what your client said, and I would encourage you to experiment with not doing that, and I want to tell you why. When we have a client becoming something, either in dream analysis or in metaphor or metaphor on the body, we're almost trying to encourage a trance state in them. And so it's important for you to take notes and remember what they said, but you did it this way. Okay, dirty tornado situation, who is ugly, disorganized, and dangerous, why are you here? And it said, I'm here to help her feel or to move to the other side. And then you said, okay, dirty tornado situation, who is ugly, disorganized, and dangerous, who is here to help her feel, how are you here to help her? Do you see how you repeated? And my concern is that when you do that, you're encouraging the client to go back to their analytical brain to see if there's a match between what they said and what you just said. So you're kind of asking them to switch back and forth. Does that make sense to you?
It does, and it's so interesting. Because I thought that I didn't just do that on purpose. I feel like I was, when we learned this tool, that that's what we were supposed to do because people don't remember what they say. But it's interesting. I guess that makes a lot of sense that you don't actually care if they, if you want them to remember.
We don't want them to remember. The most powerful times in using this tool is when you bring the client out of it, thank you, dear tornado, and then you say to your client, huh, what happened there, Melissa? And they'll say, I have no idea.
Okay.
And then it's
that's so
like,
cool.
Okay, now let me tell you what you said, and the client can get that aha. Same thing I would suggest at the end. When you brought her out, you read everything back to her. The way I do it, and you can experiment with this and see if it works better or if you like your way, rather than automatically reading back to the client, here's everything you said, I ask the client first, what'd you discover when we did that? And my concern is if you do a lot of talking at that point and they had a little wisp of an insight or they're grasping onto something a little tenuous there, they might forget. And they might, you know, clients are always trying to please us as coaches. So they might pick up some kind of nuance in your voice and take it in a direction that they think you expect or you might want. So I like to get that client inside out first. If there is none and they've really gone deep, then I'll say, well, here's what you said, rather than just doing it that way. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my feedback so well. That is so important. It's so important to be able to do that when you're trying to learn something. So I appreciate that. But I love your confidence. I love your tool choice. The energy in your voice was perfect for this. So just keep practicing and try these little suggestions and see how it works. You know, you're always free to do it your own way. But that's the way I do it, and those are the reasons I do that.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Thank you so much, Terry. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Okay, you guys, we have come to the end of our time together. Any last questions or thoughts before we sign off?
Hi, this is Cindy. I just want to thank you so much. You have been amazing, really. I can't tell you how much I've learned from you over these last four sessions, so I really, really wanted to thank you.
Oh, Cindy, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. I love coaching, and I love teaching you guys. And it's so fun for me to do this class because this is the class where you guys get to put it all together, and I can give more advanced feedback. So, and you as a group have been great about taking my feedback, and I so appreciate that.
You're such a good teacher.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I am always around for you guys. I am so excited as you embark on your journey. What classes do you have left?
We have a lizard lounge. We have some inspiration with Martha. And I'm trying to think, is there anything else?
And then I said a wrap-up.
Wow. Amazing. Well, enjoy that lizard lounge. Oh, I'm doing one of the lizard lounges. I don't know if I'll have you guys or not.
Looks like I believe you do.
Oh, well,
yes.
then we're
good.
Not going to.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week then.
All right.
Good. Later. All right, you guys. Well, it has been so much fun. I need to call Javo right now, though, and I'll see you next week.
Okay.
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Barry.
Bye.
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 Thank you.